Is political change coming to Lebanon? Independent and reformist candidates make gains in parliamentary elections, while some traditional parties lose ground. But will the newcomers have the answers to pull the country out of a deep economic crisis? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the programme. I'm Kim Vinnell. Lebanon has been called a failing state. Its currency is nearly worthless. Food, medicine and fuel are expensive and in short supply. People are unable to rely on basic public services like rubbish collection and electricity to keep their lights on. Many blame Lebanon's politicians for years of corruption and mismanagement. A parliamentary election on Sunday was their chance to vote for change. More than a dozen reformist and independent candidates who emerged from protests against the government in 2019 won seats. The Iranian-backed Hezbollah and its allies lost their parliamentary majority, and some traditional parties performed poorly. The new MPs face major challenges ahead, as Zain Khura reports from Beirut.
Many of the old faces are back, but a meaningful number of new ones made it into Lebanon's parliament, which now has a new balance of power. The Iranian-backed Hezbollah party and its allies lost their majority, but no other political grouping or party can claim victory. The opposition may be sizable, but not united. What is a first, however, in post-Civil War politics are the so-called reformists, who won at least 10% of the seats. These are candidates not affiliated to any of the mainly sectarian parties.
We have to be because we don't have to be in the polarization. We have to create a bridge.
Those new voices will stand in the middle of longtime enemies. Tensions have already spilled onto the streets. Supporters of rival parties fought on election day. Local observers also documented attacks on their teams by supporters mostly from Shia groups, Hezbollah and Amal.
Many observers witnessed so many pressures, especially in the electoral districts of Thawth and Baalbek Hirmel, by some of parties' delegates and agents and even supporters.
The Shia groups may have preserved the 27 seats allocated to their sect, but observers say they can no longer claim sole representation.
They did everything they can to intimidate voters, candidates and their representatives in the constituencies. And at the same time, there's also an alternative Shia vote. So there's a Shia vote which went outside the box and to their opponents. And that happened for the first time in spite of their attempts to keep it contained.
Through the ballot box, there is no doubt change has begun. But the old divide, Hezbollah and its allies on one hand and the Christian Lebanese forces on the other, hasn't gone away.
Lebanon's leaders will need to work together to agree on a new government and elect a president in a few months. Political deadlock is not unusual in this fractured country, but there is an urgent need to adopt reforms and laws to rescue a collapsed economy. And a polarized parliament won't make that easy.
The divide dates back to the Civil War, which ended in 1990, after which power was divided between sects. But Lebanon's parliamentary democracy is, in reality, a consensual democracy. Unanimity is needed for the system to work and peace to be maintained. Zana Khudr, Al Jazeera, Beirut.
Now, as Zaina mentioned, power was divided between the sects after the end of the war in 1990. And that system aims to guarantee political representation for all of Lebanon's 18 sects. Parliament seats are split between Christians and Muslims and allocated to different denominations within each religion. The president must always be a Maronite Christian, the prime minister a Sunni Muslim, and the speaker of the parliament a Shia Muslim. All right, let's bring in all of our guests, all joining us from Beirut. We have Verena El Amil, a political activist and lawyer who was running for a parliamentary seat. Jamal Gorsin, a political commentator and writer. And Alia Ibrahim, co-founder and CEO of Daraj.com, an independent digital media platform. A very warm welcome to the programme to you all. I'd like to start with you, Verena El Amil. You ran for parliament. You didn't win a seat in these elections. What's your take on the results generally as you look at them? How much of a shift is this really for Lebanese politics?
Hello, and thank you for having me today. I think as an overall view, I think what happened in these elections was historic. For the first time, we were able to break the monopoly of the ruling class, of the traditional political parties, and to bring the 17th of October uprising to the parliament. And now we feel that the parliament is really from the people to the people. So I think it's not negligible what has happened.
All right. I'd like to cross over to you, Alia Ibrahim. Do you agree with that assessment? I mean, the Hezbollah-led bloc lost its parliamentary majority, but Hezbollah and Amal still retained the same number of seats. So what does that actually say to you?
I would very much agree with Ms. Ami. You heard from a candidate who has lost in those elections and still considered them historic. And indeed, what has happened was for at least protesters, for demonstrators who in 2019 took the streets, was in every way a big win for the Lebanese opposition, if we may say, the people really who have been demonstrating against the political elite for the last 2-3 years, and we've seen it across the country from the extreme north to the extreme south. We've seen for the first time in 30 years 2 seats in South Lebanon being lost from the duopoly of Hezbollah Amal. We have seen the loss of traditional faces in the Lebanese politics representing pretty much the Syrian regime. You're talking and again across the country from Zahle with Mr. Eli Ferizli to the Shouf with Talal Arslan and Bia Mohab, to the south with Asad Herdin, and to the north with Faisal Karami. These are not small losses for Hezbollah and Amal. In terms of losing the majority, the vast majority that could allow really imposing politics inside parliament, this has been lost even if you look at the mathematics. In terms of the legitimacy also, the big loss of the FPM, the Free Patriotic Movement, at the level of being the legitimate biggest representative of the Christian voters, this has also changed because in numbers and in representation. So across the board, we can easily say that this was a best case scenario for the Lebanese who are outside the political establishment in Lebanon. Well, and it is indeed, I would very much agree, it is a historic achievement inside parliament.
You mentioned the FPM for our international audience, that is the Free Patriotic Movement, the party of President Michel Aoun, which was the biggest Christian bloc, is no longer. I'd like to pass over to you, Jamal Ghosin. What do you make of the results? Is this actually indicative of a major shift? Is Hezbollah really losing support?
Absolutely not. This is, I don't agree that it went pretty much as expected. There was an expected loss that was going to come to the ruling majority, the previous ruling majority, in favor of emerging forces. The thing is that we still don't know where the division lies right now and who actually may have a majority. I think we do have a centrist bloc between the former leading majority and the former part of government that were in the unity government that decided to play the role of opposition. And right now we might see a different electoral map altogether. Like, it's not two solid blocks, but rather maybe two blocks and a swing block in the middle that is composed of old veteran politicians like the Speaker of the House and Walid Jumblatt, the leader of the Progressive Socialist Movement, who have known to play swing roles in the history of Lebanon. And now they can actually have a bigger say because they can play in the middle and swing one way or the other depending on the issue. And I think this is what we're looking at right now, more than a complete shift in the political power. There's just a complete it's just a shift in the makeup of the coalitions that will be in parliament.
Okay, I'd like to cross back to you, Verena El Amil. Obviously, as we've been saying, one of the biggest things to come from these elections, the election of new independents, so the so-called reformists looking to shake things up. Can they really make big changes given the rigidity of the entire system?
I think since there's more than 10 MPs now, they are able to present an appeal in front of the of the constitutional constitution. However, I think what's good about the MPs that are now in parliament is that they are from grassroots, from the movement, from the streets, from the heart of the 17th of October uprising. This means that there will still be pressure on the streets. This means there will be the some sort of cooperation with them. This means that we will all still support them and try to help. This means that we will still put more pressures, whether on the streets, whether in the syndicates, whether in the universities. So I think, yeah, it's if we see it from a holistic approach, I think there's a lot to be done.
Alia Ibrahim, can independents actually work together as a bloc? How much unity is there?
I think this is a very important point. I think what we're about to see, and this is, of course, taking into consideration that no violence is used by the government or by Hezbollah, which we have seen in previous episodes. If it's left to life inside parliament, dynamics are going to change. What we have seen over the last more than 15 years was polarization within parliament and just blocking the political life. There was no political life in Lebanon. There was no, what Verena was mentioning, this idea of presenting laws that are very important to the Lebanese people. What's very important to the Lebanese, to the average Lebanese person right now, what this election has shown us is that the Lebanese care mostly about their lives, about the economy, about having electricity, about having jobs, about having an income. Today, you're talking about a country where 80% of the population is on the poverty line. This is what people care about. And what we are seeing people who are coming. Till now, you look at the block of 17 people, the fact that their sects are not important, how representative they are of the different regions in Lebanon, of the different sects, is not important. What's important is that they came from October 19 and from October 17, and that they were not even allowed to walk inside that parliament. There is a member of parliament today who was who had a bullet in his heart, next to his heart, while trying to get and protest next to parliament. And now he is a legislator inside parliament. We should expect the change of dynamics within the legislative life in Lebanon, again, pending that it's left to be a real political life. Sure. Among those people, there are some who come with extremely sophisticated backgrounds in environmental issues, and economic issues, and I'm pretty sure their input will not be small if they're allowed to block. How important it is that they agree on all matters. I really don't think it's very important that they are represented as a bloc on all matters.
Okay.
If this is
Alia, I just want to
life, because
I want
they
to,
could diverge on some I, priorities.
I hear you. I want to push into something that you raised. As you said, 80% of the population, according to the UN, lives in some form of poverty. If you're looking at, I think it's 20 different indicators, things like access to sanitation, health, school attendance, as well as things like income. I mean, that's phenomenal. If the population, is obviously struggling so much, why were there not more people voting for reformists? Why were there not more people voting for independents?
Because this was a sanctioned election as well. The boycotting in some areas was to tell the political establishment, we're not going to give you a vote of confidence. What we have seen is a decrease in the overall turnout, but it was an increase in some people who never voted before and who voted for change. A lot of people don't have the luxury to go in certain areas and vote like they would want to vote. The turnout that was smaller in a lot of places was just a vote of no confidence. And a lot of people actually voted This is a vote of no confidence in the political establishment. Mm-hmm. The newcomers are very fresh. They are going to be tested. A lot of people did not know them. A lot of they didn't even have great access to the media. They are not very well known. So this is really understandable. Plus, there was so much that was done to demotivate people, to terrorize people in a lot of cases, when they are known to be going to vote against the different establishment lists across the country. Mm-hmm. And of course, there was the call from Saad al-Hariri not to boycott the elections, which again played a role in certain areas like Akkar, like North Lebanon, like Tripoli. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot that contributed to the low turnout. But again, we have to take into consideration that this was paralleled by a higher turnout in diaspora that made a difference at the level of the final result, because the diaspora mostly voted for change.
Okay, Jamal Ghassin, I'd like to cross over to you. What message, if any, do you think that the voting in of this number of reformist candidates, what message do you think that sends to the political establishment?
Again, we must be looking at different numbers, because if you look at the numbers in light of what was happening in Lebanon, and we see that there is a strong reaffirming vote for some of the powers like the Hezbollah, who got more votes than last time. For the FPM, they were predicted that they would have, it would be the demise of them. They lost a couple of votes. So the voting turned out, what we saw, the new bloc that came in basically came and inherited the bloc that basically withdrew and boycotted the election. And we're talking about the Future Movement led by former Prime Minister Saad Hariri. And these people who we call, or some people are calling reformists, is also assuming that they claim to be reformists. You're talking about poverty and about economic issues. We have yet to hear any different economic proposals that might come from these. Some of these people actually, of the new candidates in parliament, they're actually carry the voice of the IMF and the bankers, and they're pushing for the privatization of state assets in order to recover the losses of the Ponzi scheme that the banks have. So this is a very dangerous thing that the Lebanese people must be aware of, because you have the illusion of new faces, but it's going to be the same economic policies that led to this economic collapse. They're basically Hariri, neo-Harirists, and I'm not talking about everybody here, of course. I'm talking about, Alia mentioned that there are that people didn't get attention in the media. One of the candidates that won and won big, Mark Dow, was a host of a primetime TV show to create an alternative. I don't know what more attention in the media can a platform get. And these, a lot of the candidates that run in his circle are pro-IMF policies, they're pro-privatization, and they're not any different economically with their policies than what got Lebanon to this disaster that they're in.
It doesn't sound like you have any hope of any change, Mr. Ghassin. I mean, whoever is the new prime minister will have to work with the International Monetary Fund to try and get Lebanon out of this economic crisis. So do you have any hope for the future if what has gotten the country to this point? It sounds like you don't expect anything to change.
Well, this is the whole, raising the hopes is dangerous, because the problem in Lebanon is not, it's not technical. It's not a matter of a minor legislation here or law here or policy here. It's actually structural. This country has been in trouble on weak ground since its inception 100 years ago. We've always had collapses, wars, and it always seems to spiral down into this area because there is a structural issue. You cannot have this country built on this confessional system. Even if you look at the elections right now, you see that there is underrepresentation of people from certain areas and certain religions. compared to others. And this has to do with their social class, with their whether they're old money or old establishment or not. So the division is elsewhere. It's not about this is structural. This cannot be resolved by legislation. Lebanon needs a new constitution, a new social contract in order for it to solve its problems.
I can see, Alia Ibrahim, you want to jump in. What did you want to add there?
Yes, it's just really a very minor point, but that is very important. Portraying the newcomers, I agree that they are newcomers, that they need time to test them. I also believe that they need to get the time to be tested. Today we are hearing, what have they done? The dollar has jumped already. These people have not even walked inside parliament, and people are asking for change that is going to happen so quickly. We need to give them time. But to say that they represent the bankers, again, let's look at the list. Let's look at the candidates that were running on the list of the establishment in South Lebanon. Mr. Marwan Khairuddin, who I would believe is a representative of a bank, he's a bank owner who has played a role in transferring money of PEPs outside Lebanon when the depositors were losing their money. He was running on the list of Hezbollah, and it does not get more bankers oriented than that. And he lost to somebody who does not come from a rich family, who does not come from the IMF circuits at all. On the contrary, what we are looking at, there is all this conversation that needs to be had about how to save the economic situation in Lebanon. And we have to look, I personally am absolutely not for selling government assets or even doing anything with them unless we have a functioning political life. This is a government, this is a system that has already taken us into bankruptcy. It cannot itself figure out the economic solutions. We will lose whatever is left. But to say that the newcomers are the ones flirting with the IMF is simply not correct. Okay. All the data shows exactly the opposite of that.
We are coming almost to the end of the program. We've got a few minutes left. Verena El Amil, if we look at the road ahead, the current parliament expires the 22nd of May. Then there has to be a new speaker elected. Then the president calls for binding consultations to choose the prime minister, who will form a government. How do you foresee this process? How do you think it's going to go?
I think the challenge here is, I think for the first time, the ruling class, the traditional political parties, don't have, as I was saying before, the monopoly of representation. I think they are afraid because something has changed, a fundamental change. I agree with Mr. Jamal while saying that I think we need a fundamental systematic change, but I think sometimes this kind of change can be met through the legislations. And I think if we continue to present some laws, if we continue to lobby from the inside, from the outside, to put pressure on the streets, to put pressure everywhere, I think, yes, we can meet the change that we want. As for the next roadmap, I think it's important. The next, I think what's mostly important is the economical crisis and the way out. And I think what's most important is not to sell the state's resources. So I think that's the most important thing in the coming phase.
Thank you very much for your time, Verena El Amil. Thank you to all our guests, Jamal Gorsin and Alia Ibrahim. And thank you too for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Kim Vanel, and the whole team here in Doha, bye-bye for now.